Did you know that iron deficiency is one of the most common, yet often overlooked, nutritional gaps affecting 1 in 3 adults, especially women? I'm a lifelong vegetarian, and so getting enough iron has been a constant struggle. There are plenty of times when I tried to give blood and I couldn't because my iron was too low, especially in my 20s when my diet consisted of mostly pasta. So I have had to take iron supplements at various times in my life. So when Siderol from PermaNutra wanted to advertise with us, it was a no-brainer. It's a premium iron supplement powered by patented sucrosomial technology, which helps your body absorb 3 to 4 times more iron while avoiding the common side effects of traditional iron supplements like nausea and constipation. It's vegan and gluten-free and 100% allergen-free and free from artificial colorants. So if you feel like no matter how much you rest, you're still running on empty, you're not alone. Over 2 million people have already discovered Siderol, and it could be the support you've been looking for. So head to PharmaNutra-US.com and use code ATTWG for 10% off your first order of Siderol. That's PharmaNutra-US.com, promo code ATTWG for 10% off today. I didn't know much about money growing up. I got my first job and just kind of spent it. With Acorns Early, your kids don't have to get their money lessons the hard way. Start taking small steps today. Let them learn by doing and watch their potential grow for tomorrow. Because no matter what your kids grow up to be, they're going to have to deal with money, so you might as well start building those skills now. With Acorns Early, they can learn by doing and watch as the small steps they take today grow into big potential for tomorrow. Acorns Early lets kids learn by doing. They can earn money with the in-app chores tracker, practice real-life budgeting with automatic allowances, and even set their own savings goals. We've been using it for our youngest and he loves it. He feels so special having his own debit card, and I can really see him prioritizing the things that he wants to buy. Ready to join over 1.2 million parents and kids who've unlocked their kids' potential with Acorns Early? Get your first month on us when you head to acornsearly.com/ATTWG or download the Acorns Early app. That's 1 month free when you sign up at acornsearly.com/ATTWG.
Acorns Early Card is issued by Community Federal Savings Bank, member FDIC, pursuant to license by MasterCard International. Free trial for new subscribers only. Subscription fee starting from $5 per month unless canceled. Terms apply at acorns.com/early terms.
Have you ever had a gut feeling about someone and ignored it? In the thriller Ask for Andrea by Noelle W. Eiley, that feeling could be the difference between life and death, and it may also be a message from the other side. So Ethan read this book even before I did and has a lot to say about it.
Cover to cover, I could not put this book down. It is such a page turner. It is an intense read. It takes you from one point of view to another and culminates in a very intense finish that keeps you on the edge the entire time.
So basically, it's three women were murdered by the same man, and they unite in the afterlife to stop him from killing again in a domestic thriller that meets The Lovely Bones. If you've ever screamed at a true crime doc, why didn't anyone listen?
This is the book to read for that.
Ask for Andrea by Noelle Eiley.
Darkcast Network. Welcome to the dark side of podcasting.
In basic terms, Occam's Razor states that given two theories, the simplest answer is often correct. But in true crime, that's not always the case, especially when it comes to unsolved mysteries. On July 1st, 1995, Erin Marie Gilbert attended the Girdwood Forest Fair in Girdwood, Alaska. She was on a first date with a man named David Combs. David later claimed that he had car trouble and that while he was looking for help, Erin disappeared. Combs initially cooperated with the police investigation into Erin's disappearance, but quickly stopped talking. As more of his story came out, the less it seemed to add up. So, is the simplest answer the correct one? Or is there a possibility that David Combs, who has never been named as a suspect in Erin's disappearance, truly had nothing to do with it? When a person goes missing, there's a special kind of pain in the not knowing. I want to tell you the stories of those who never came home. Today, I want to tell you the story of Erin Gilbert. I'm Kona Gallagher.
And I'm Ethan Flick.
And this is and then they were gone. Everyone,
welcome back.
This week we are taking you to July in Alaska, aka the land of perpetual sun.
Oh right, yeah.
Yes,
you always hear about the towns that are engulfed in darkness for 28 days,
but right,
yeah, they don't really talk about that, although there was that one movie with Al Pacino, I think it was called Insomnia.
Oh yeah, yeah, wasn't Robin Williams in that? That was,
yeah,
like
he was the bad guy.
Serious. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But yeah, so this is like that. So this takes place in and around Anchorage, Alaska. And in July, the sun didn't set till almost midnight.
Oh my God. And then I guess it only stayed down for a little bit.
Yeah, till like 4 a.m.
That's crazy. Like I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. Well, so having been to like Ireland in the summer, it's very similar there. That's about like what it is. And it's incredibly bizarre. For somebody who comes from, you know, the mid-Atlantic region, like we do,
yeah,
in the United States. But, you know, this case does show that people can vanish in broad daylight. Even a beautiful, striking 5'11" woman with a distinctive tattoo.
Wow.
Yeah, this is one of those cases where it seems on one hand that it should have been solved quickly, but on the other hand, there's truly not a lot of hard evidence that suggests anything, really.
Is this another case where the police are going to say that she just walked away on her own? Also?
I mean, spoiler alert, yeah, it does come up.
All right.
But I mean, no, that's not like the central focus of it. But, you know, it's just it's bizarre. But before we get started, I want to give a special shout out to our newest members over on Patreon.
Yay, we've got new members.
Yes, Victoria J and Genevieve C. Thank you so much for your support. It really means a lot.
Thank you. Thank you.
And if you would like to join us over there at any level, you can get these episodes early and ad free. But now let's get into the story of Erin Marie Gilbert. Erin Marie Gilbert was born on May 4th, 1971 in Everett, Washington. She was one of three sisters, and she seemingly had it all. She was tall, gorgeous, like athletic and smart. So, I mean, truly just checked off all the boxes. Not only that, but she was also kind. Erin was just under 6 feet tall and played basketball, volleyball, softball, and ran track in high school.
Jesus, when did she have time to eat?
Well, I don't know, because she also graduated with a 4.0.
Of course.
Right? Like, oh my God. So after graduation, she was living with her dad, Kurt Gilbert, in San Francisco, but, you know, didn't exactly know really what she wanted to do with life. She knew she wanted more, but didn't exactly know what that looked like. Her older sister, Stephanie Juarez, had married an Air Force man, and they had moved to Anchorage, Alaska, to the Elmendorf Air Force Base, which is now called the Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. Stephanie's husband traveled a lot, as you would imagine, as an active duty military member. So Stephanie often found herself home alone with her two small children. Looking for a little help and maybe some companionship, she convinced Erin to move in with them. Stephanie found Erin a job nannying for a family that she knew, and Erin began to settle into Alaskan life. Though she was busy with work and with helping out her sister and brother-in-law at their house, she was still a single woman in her 20s, so Erin liked to go out when she could. One of her favorite places was a local bar called Killcoot Charlie's, affectionately called Coots by the locals.
Killcoot Charlie's?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And I just like picture a very dark, windowless
dive bar.
Is that just what you envision all bars in Alaska to be, though?
Yes. So it was here that she met Dave Combs in June of 1995. He was a few years older, but the pair hit it off and exchanged numbers. So I'm not sure if either of them called the other, but they didn't see each other again. It sounds like for like a few weeks, you know, maybe. Mm-hmm. Reports kind of differ on this. Some make it seem like, you know, this was a few days. Others make it seem like it was a few weeks. But in any case, they saw each other back at Coots. And this time, Dave asked Aaron out on a date to the 20th annual Girdwood Forest Fair, which was the next day on July 1st. So Aaron, of course, told her sister about the date. And according to Stephanie, Aaron wasn't like super excited about it. But, you know, she figured it was at least worth going on. Basically, what it sounds like is she's like, Dave was nice enough, but she didn't think this was going to be the man of her dreams or anything.
Okay.
But, you know, she was new in town, like she was in her 20s. And so she figured, why not?
Why not? Yeah.
Basically, like, what do I have to lose? So that day, July 1st, Dave arrived at 4 p.m. to come pick her up as promised. And the whole family came out to greet him.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah.
On the first date?
Yes. So Aaron's brother-in-law, Stephanie's husband, played the role of like the protective man of the house.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And so, you know, they all came outside to meet him. And Dave was wearing sunglasses because like it was a sunny summer day. And you know, but he did that thing where you're like, asked him to take them off so he could get a better look at him. And so one of those kind of power moves.
Yeah.
And Dave complied, like, you know, just laughing about it, keeping it light. And everything was cool. And the two got ready to head to the fair. Now, Aaron's 4-year-old nephew asked if she wanted to take a cell phone. But Aaron said she would be fine.
Oh, I guess this is 1995, right?
It is. Yeah. But that's so weird to me because, I mean, yes, having a phone with her could have possibly changed the outcome of this evening. But like, it was 1995 and hardly anybody had cell phones.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, on one hand, it's like normal that she didn't want to take it because that just wasn't a part of her life. But on the other, it's like crazy that she even had that option.
Yeah. I don't remember what cell phones even looked like in 1995.
Yeah, I don't know either. I feel like they were still in suitcases at that point.
Right? Yeah. Like, I feel like the
Nokias didn't come out till like 97 or 98.
Yeah, those were definitely later. So
yeah, I don't know.
And flip phones didn't come out for a while.
Oh, no, that was like 2000. So anyway, Stan's cell phone, they get into Dave's car and head out to the fair, which is roughly a 40-minute drive. They get there around 5 p.m., or at least we think they do, just, again, based on him getting there at 4, talking to the family, mm-hmm. and it being a 40-minute drive.
Yeah.
But here's the deal with this timeline. It's not really corroborated that well. The majority of it comes directly from Dave's early statements to police, but there just aren't a lot of witnesses to back it up.
They weren't able to find any witnesses that saw them actually at the fair, or did they just never make it to the fair?
Well, we're going to get into all of that.
Okay.
But to that question, I was reading a Reddit thread about this case, and a few people asked if it was possible that they never made it to the fair in the first place, you know, because that, I think, like you just asked, it's a logical question. But we do seem to have at least one witness who did report seeing at least Aaron there.
Okay.
Most of the reports say that at least one witness came forward saying that they saw the pair at the beer garden on the fairgrounds. Now, this Reddit post was written by a verified user who knows Stephanie. Apparently, their father went to high school with Stephanie, so that's how they're kind of like connected to this. Yeah. They said that a witness said that they remember talking to Aaron because of her tattoo. She had a large tattoo of a blue flower on her chest, which, I mean, I've seen it, and we'll show the picture, of course, but I mean, it's memorable. Like, it's a very unique blue flower that's basically like on her chest, kind of above her like left breast, and it goes up to her collarbone.
So visible with like normal shirts.
I think so. At least part of it would be visible. So now this person who said that they talked to Erin about her tattoo, I don't know if this is the same witness who says that they saw both of them at the beer garden, but I think it might be. But again, that part is just really fuzzy.
So at the very least, though, we have multiple witnesses that have...
No, we don't know. We don't know if it's multiple or just the one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But we have at least one who does remember talking to her about tattoos at the fair.
Right. So she did make it to the fair.
That's what it seems like. But as far as we know, like, that is the only reported sighting of Erin after she left home that day that didn't come from Dave himself. According to Dave, the pair decided to leave the fair at around 6 p.m., meaning they only stayed for about an hour. And, you know, a lot has been made of this as well. It's like you drove 40 minutes each way and you're only going to stay about an hour. And there are a couple different ways to look at it. Like, one, Erin had to work the next day. And on a first date, an hour and 40 minutes, give or take, I think is kind of long enough to know if it's like...
Well, yeah, especially because you have that 40 minutes in a car.
That's what I mean. So you got the 40 minutes in the car, the hour or so at a fair. Like, right. I think you kind of like get an idea of whether or not this is like going to be a thing.
Yeah.
If they were a couple or whatever, and they drove all that way and only stay for an hour, it would seem a bit weird. But I think for a first date, it's actually not that strange.
Yeah. And who knows? Maybe the fair was lame.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And that's, funnily enough, like somebody else on the thread who's from that area said that. They're like, yeah, it's a forest fair. And if you're not into that, like, it's extremely boring.
So, I don't even know what a forest fair is.
I don't know either. But yeah, it seems kind of niche. And so I kind of get like what she's saying.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, if that's not your thing, it's like, it's just weird. So, you know, it could have been any number of things, right? But this is all, again, according to Dave. So according to him, they decide to leave around 6. And after that, they went back to where he had parked the car. And, you know, he had parked the car in like a field somewhere, like as you would expect for a fair situation. But when they got back, the car wouldn't start.
Oh.
Yeah. So even though summer, like I mentioned, in this area is almost perpetual daylight, a law had recently been passed that required headlights to be used on the highways at all times. But like people weren't used to that.
So he left his headlights on.
Exactly. Because he had had his headlights on the way up. And this is before car technology kind of caught up to this. Right. So like daytime running lights weren't a thing on cars. You just had to manually turn your headlights on. And it was really easy to forget to turn them off.
Yeah.
So apparently that's what happened. They get back to the car. Car's dead. So all of this is like completely reasonable to me so far. Like everything about this.
It all makes sense. Right. Yeah.
This is where it kind of starts to take a left turn. Dave said that he told Erin he was going to go to a friend's house nearby and try to get help, like jumper cables or, you know, to get a jumper, whatever, right? So, okay,
That's a little strange, odd,
but...
Wouldn't, like, think to go and ask somebody that's working at the fair?
Or, like, literally anybody in the parking lot, anybody in the fair, like anybody, you know?
Hey, does anybody have jumper cables? Can you
jump my car? I just feel like in 1995, like everybody had jumper cables in their car. Like there were probably 7,000 sets of jumper cables in that field at that time.
Yeah. I mean, hell, we have jumper cables in our car.
Yeah. And so it's like one of those things that's like, okay, well, that's kind of weird, but, you know, he thought he knew somebody nearby, so he went to go to somebody he knew instead of asking a stranger. Okay.
That still seems odd to me, but, I mean, I don't know. Maybe the friend was really lived really close by, too. Who knows?
And maybe they were a mechanic. Like,
sure, yeah.
Who knows? He goes and does this, but after he leaves, he apparently realizes that he doesn't actually know where this friend lives, so... He's lost and just kind of starts wandering around and, according to Dave, is gone for the next 2 hours. Just leaves her.
Okay.
2 hours.
That's all right. Mm-hmm. So he can't account for his whereabouts for 2 hours, essentially.
Well, yes, at this point, 2 hours.
Okay.
So again, according to him, 2 hours goes by. He gives up trying to find the house.
I think I probably would have given up a lot sooner than that.
But yeah. That's okay. I mean, tenacity is one thing, but like, let's be reasonable. So 2 hours goes by. He goes back to the car.
Mm-hmm.
And surprise, surprise, Aaron isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
Which, under the best of circumstances, like, why would Aaron be there?
Yeah.
For the love of God. Like, she doesn't know this guy. Like, why the hell would she just, like, stay by his broken-ass car for 2 hours? That's insane. Maybe that's what he was thinking, too. Like, of course she's gone. It's been 2 hours. I don't know if he did this at that point or if this is something he did later. But at some point after he returned on this 2 hour from this 2 hour journey, he tried to start his car back up and it started.
Okay. Bullshit. I'm sorry. Wait a minute. So he disappears for 2 hours. Now it's 8 o'clock ish, right?
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden the battery got recharged while he was gone. Like, that's not the way cars work.
I don't know. Some people have said that, like, that could potentially happen. You know, the car doesn't start, you leave it, it starts. I'm not a mechanic. I don't know.
I'm not a mechanic either. It just doesn't seem like that makes sense.
Right. It's definitely not the most normal story, right? Okay. So again, I don't know if he tried the car as soon as he got back or if he waited, but in either case, what he did decide to do, according to him, when he got back and saw that Aaron was not there, was to go back into the fair to look for her, which,
okay,
that's reasonable.
Yes,
right?
That's reasonable.
Because if I came back and, you know, the person I'm with was gone, I would assume, yeah, of course you didn't want to wait at the fucking car for 2 hours. Like, you went back into the fair and did anything else.
Right.
So that makes sense. But again, according to him, and, you know, this is, like you said, around 8 o'clock-ish, give or take, he said he stayed at the fair searching for her until 1 a.m., which is just, like, an inordinate amount of time to look for somebody in, like, a fair.
Yeah.
When they're not, you know, a lost, like, four-year-old or whatever. Like,
right. This is also a 5'11".
Yeah.
Woman. Like,
very memorable, like, looking woman, right?
And I can't imagine the fair was that large or had, like, that many. It's not like you're searching through thousands of people.
Yeah. And I mean, even if you are searching through, like, 8,000 people or whatever, I mean, till 1 a.m., like, what do you think is happening? So, okay, maybe he looks for her for a little while and then it's just like, ah, screw it. I'm just going to enjoy my night and just decides to stay at the fair and chill till 1 a.m. Like, I don't know. Either way, it's weird.
Yeah.
But that's what he said he did.
I mean, that's 5 hours of searching.
Right. So, okay, again, just to recap, here's the rough timeline, according to Dave, mostly. He picks Aaron up at her house around 4 p.m. They arrive at the fair around 4:40, 5 o'clock. They decide to leave around 6. He discovers his car won't start and wanders around lost until about 8. He returns to the fair and looks for Aaron until 1 a.m. But then what does he do after that?
Goes home.
We have to assume. We actually don't know. That part hasn't really been made public. Like, it's assumed that he told police that he drove home and went to sleep. But we don't actually know what he said he did after 1 a.m. that night. The next thing we're sure of on Dave's timeline is that at 7 a.m., he called Stephanie. So he called the house because it was the landline. So that's probably
the only number that he had.
Exactly. Right. So he calls the house and Stephanie answers and he asks her if Aaron made it home okay.
Okay.
At 7 a.m. Stephanie, I'm sure, is just like waking up and has no idea if Aaron made it home okay, because, you know, she wouldn't have necessarily heard her come in based on like where Stephanie's room was versus the front door versus Aaron's room. Like, she had no fucking idea. She just assumed that she was in her room, but she hadn't checked on her. Like, her sister was a grown woman.
Right.
So at that point, obviously, she did go in and check and saw that Aaron was not only not in her room, but that it didn't appear that she had been home at any point. So Stephanie was immediately worried. Aaron obviously wasn't with Dave, and she was not the type of person who would just stay out all night. And even if she did, for whatever reason, like, Aaron knew that Stephanie would be concerned if she just, like, didn't come home. And so, like, Aaron would have found a way to call her just to give her a heads up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, again, Stephanie's not her parent. She doesn't have to, like, ask permission or answer to her. But again, it's just common courtesy. Like, right. If you're not going to come home, you just give her a heads up. Like, that's it, right? And that's the type of thing Aaron would have done. But clearly, she didn't. So Stephanie knew something was wrong and sprang into action. So again, the whole family piled into the car and headed to the fairgrounds to search for Aaron. When they arrived, roughly 40 minutes later, not only was Dave already there, but according to Stephanie, he had bought a hot dog and was eating it when they arrived.
At like 8 in the morning?
Yes. And so, like, aside from the utter randomness of an 8 a.m. hot dog, Stephanie found this meaningful because Dave lived near them. And Stephanie jumped in the car and raced over to the fairgrounds, like, as soon as she got off the phone with Dave.
I mean, did she say that she was going to do that to Dave? And that, you know, maybe that's why Dave went?
I don't know. But, you know, he somehow got there so far ahead of her that he had time to go in and get a hot dog.
Right.
So regardless of if she told him that she was on her way or she didn't, he got there way ahead of her. And so either he drove insanely fast or he wasn't home when he called her and was already either at the fairgrounds or nearby.
Mm-hmm.
So Stephanie, her family, and presumably Dave, since he was there, started searching the area for Aaron, including the woods nearby. They were able to have the fair organizers put an announcement out on the loudspeaker, but they found no sign of the missing woman. So after their unsuccessful search, Stephanie's next move was to call police and report her sister missing. But predictably, since
she's an adult, she walked off on her own.
Yep. Yeah, and she hadn't even been missing a full day at this point, so they didn't do anything at all. In fact, it wouldn't be until Stephanie contacted a local news station that they would take action in Aaron's case. And she actually, again, the timing on this I'm not entirely sure of, but it sounds like Stephanie might have even done that same day just to get, like, Aaron's picture on the news.
Smart.
Yeah, no. I mean, Stephanie was on top of all of this. So once police did start an investigation, they, of course, brought Dave in for questioning. And according to them, he was cooperative and answered all of their questions. And so that's where we get this timeline from him that we've already talked about. And I do think, though, that it's important to emphasize that very little of this timeline can be corroborated.
Right. You have the 2 hours where he was, quote unquote, lost. Then the next 5 hours.
Yeah.
Now, in theory, there could be a possibility of corroborating that he was at the fair if people saw him or whatever.
Correct. However, nobody has ever come forward saying that they saw him searching for Aaron between 8 and 1.
Right. So now we're talking about 5 hours of missing time. And even longer, because that's 5 hours on, according to his timeline.
Yeah, plus the 7 hours. Plus the 2 hours. So that's 7 hours total that we're at now.
Right. Plus nobody, I mean, he's unaccounted for basically until 7 a.m.
Correct. So in actuality, if we assume that the witness statement saying that they spoke to Aaron is correct, they made it to the fair around 5. I've heard different accounts as to, like, when the witness says that they saw Aaron, but let's just say it's between 5 and 6. So best case scenario,
13 hours. Yeah.
Yeah. I had to double check the math, but you're right. Best case scenario, 13 hour
window
of uncorroborated time. Beyond that, and again, we don't know what the police have figured out because they obviously have not talked a lot about the details of this, but we know from the family to this day doesn't know if Dave actually had a friend who lived near the fairgrounds.
Right.
So they don't know if this like person, this house, whatever, even existed in the first place. And nobody has ever come forward being like, oh, yeah, I know Dave. And I do live like half a mile from there. But I didn't see him that night. I guess he forgot where I, you know what? Like, there's never been anybody who's come forward to say, like, yes, I was the friend or whatever. And Dave has never like said, no, it's my friend, Frank. Like,
yeah,
it's this guy. This is who I was talking about. And we don't have any evidence of where he was between 6 and 8. We don't know if he actually returned to the fairgrounds around 8 at all. We don't know if his car battery was ever dead.
Because it magically came back on.
Exactly. So we can assume that it did either magically come back on or was never dead in the first place because, you know, I guess his car was maybe in a different place. Maybe he drove it. It's like, we don't even know, right? Like, we don't even have evidence that his car moved at all in that time period. We don't know if he went back to the fair and stayed until 1 a.m. Nobody's ever come forward saying that they saw him there. But nobody's ever come forward saying that they saw him somewhere else.
Right.
You know? All we know is that at around 8 a.m., according to Stephanie, he was at the fairgrounds eating a hot dog. So as the investigation actually kicked into gear, Alaska State Troopers performed a more thorough search of the area around the fairgrounds using helicopters and tracking dogs. Tracking dogs could not figure out like what direction Aaron might have gone in. The helicopters didn't see anything weird. And once Aaron's father, Kurt, learned about his daughter's disappearance, he flew up to Alaska to help search as well. But like, I've never been to Alaska, but it's vast. There's a lot of space and a lot of wilderness. And I think when he got up there and just saw what they were up against, it was just daunting. I mean, she could truly be anywhere. So at some point during these early days of the investigation, Dave consented to a search of his car. Now, we do know that Aaron's fingerprints were found in it, but I mean, you would expect Aaron's fingerprints to be found in it because we know for a fact that she got in the car.
Right.
However, no further information on whether or not any additional evidence was found has ever been released. So we know her fingerprints are there. We don't know anything else. If, you know, they found any hairs, if like they found fingerprints in places where maybe her fingerprints shouldn't have been.
Like the trunk.
Yeah, right. Like, we don't know anything about that. We just know that her fingerprints were found. Now, David ended up making several statements to police, and apparently he stayed consistent with his weird-ass story in each one of them. Like, police have come out and said that, like, he never wavered. He threw out this story, and he stuck to it. He even agreed to take a polygraph test, but when the day came, he refused, and after that, did stop cooperating with the investigation. But here's the thing, like, even though his story is sketchy, and even though the most likely answer is that he did something to Aaron, police have nothing on him, like, no actual evidence, so they can't compel him to talk.
Right. Yeah. If they didn't find anything in the car, then
no. There's not even like some bullshit charge that they can bring him in on to to like force an interview.
Yeah.
You know, like we see in a lot of these cases, right? There's literally nothing. And so if the cops don't have anything on you, you don't have to talk to them. Like, you can just stop cooperating and leave.
Yeah, it's not against the law.
Carl Sagan said, absence of evidence is not evidence of absence, which in this context basically means that not being able to prove something doesn't mean that it didn't happen. Just because David can't prove most of his story doesn't necessarily mean that it's false. Though on the flip side, it also means that just because the police don't have enough evidence to prove that he harmed Aaron doesn't mean that he didn't. What it means is that the investigation has been at a virtual standstill for nearly 30 years. In those intervening years, Dave has not spoken to anyone about Aaron or her disappearance, at least not publicly. He continues to refuse to return calls from cold case detectives, and he hasn't spoken to Aaron's family since, I believe, that morning on the fairgrounds. Podcasts and news organizations have reached out as well, but he refuses to talk to any of them. This could be because keeping his mouth shut has allowed him to get away with murder up to this point, so why would he say anything? But we also have to look at it from the other perspective. This was a man in his 20s at the time who was on a date with a woman who just vanished off the face of the earth.
Right. I didn't want to jump to defending him, but like, I mean, come on, if you're in his shoes, and let's assume that he didn't do anything nefarious, yeah, I wouldn't want to fucking talk about it either.
Right. I mean, you've got to think that, like, even if he had nothing to do with what happened to her, you would think that that would cause a lot of guilt, you know?
He also barely knew her.
Right. Yeah. He had met her like a couple times at a bar.
Right. Like, it's not like his wife went missing. And,
exactly.
You know?
Yeah. If he truly did tell police everything he knew in those several statements that he gave to them at the beginning and believed that he had no more useful information, I can understand why he would just want to put this behind him and get on with his life. And as suspicious as it may look, no one should ever take a polygraph. So rather than canceling out of guilt, he could have canceled because he came to his senses.
Obviously, polygraphs are inadmissible in court, but they're also just kind of bullshit.
They are. I mean, it's all about how the polygrapher and police decide to interpret it. And
right.
They can use it to jam you up for something you didn't do. Like, don't take a fucking polygraph.
Yeah, ever.
Yeah. And yes, because, it's a paradox because it makes you extremely guilty when you don't.
Yeah, but
don't do it.
Even if you're 100% innocent and you take a polygraph, if you're like anxious.
Yeah, no, I've said on this show many times, I would fail any fucking polygraph anybody gave me about any subject.
Because you're immediately.
Yeah.
On edge when they strap you in or whatever.
Yeah, like there's no way. Like, yeah. I just could not do it. And, you know, also, though, but getting back to Dave, if we actually take his wacky story at face value, there was plenty of time for something else to have happened to Aaron.
Right.
For instance, one early theory is that Aaron wandered into the woods and got lost. Her family, of course, thought that there was no way Aaron would do something that ridiculous.
Yeah.
But, like, you can kind of see why the police had to consider it, right?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I mean, it's just one of those things that you just have to, like, check the box.
Sure, but you would also assume that with the amount of searching that they did, that they would have found some sort of evidence of her being in the woods.
Well, exactly. And I think that's why, though, the early searches really did concentrate on those woods so much. Because A, either she could have gone out there and something, you know, happened accidentally, or B, if something bad happened to her by somebody else's hand, there's also a chance that she's in those woods.
Right.
So, like, that makes complete sense. But of course, they also considered the old chestnut of her deciding to walk off and start a new life. But the problem in this case with that is that this was the new life that she had left voluntarily to start.
Right.
Like, she was in San Francisco and she left to move to Alaska and, like, hang out with her sister and go to cosmetology. Like, she was nannying and she was going to go to cosmetology school. Like, this was her new life. Like, she already walked off and started a new life.
Well, and it also seems a bit odd to choose that time.
Like, yeah, like in the middle of a date.
While you're out on a date, like, you know what? I think now's a good time to just, like, let's just
Yeah.
Fuck this and start all over.
No, it's insane. I'm not trying to like say that the police went down this rabbit hole because they truly did not. It's just another box that they had to check, right? Uh-huh. Like, you know, it was brought up. I don't think it was ever seriously considered. Yeah.
That's good.
Now, another option is that while Dave was searching for his friend's house for 2 hours, Aaron either went back into the fair or stayed in the field area where they were parked and met someone else, and that person or persons could have taken her. This case is so troubling because even with an obvious suspect, there's just no evidence of anything. And that's why David Combs has never been actually named as a suspect by police. Yes, he gave a weird story, but there's no evidence and also no motive. Like, he and Aaron didn't have a history. He wasn't the jealous, abusive ex or current boyfriend or anything like that. Maybe, you know, one of the theories is that he wanted a little more out of the date than Aaron did, and he snapped when she rejected him. But like, that's a huge leap,
right,
for somebody who has no reported history of violence whatsoever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say that, like, in the years since this, has he had any trouble with the law?
No.
Yeah.
I looked him up and, you know, this is somewhat, like, there hasn't been a lot because, again, he hasn't been talking, right?
Sure.
So there's not a lot about him out there, but I think I did find him based on a few context clues that I had. And yeah, it seems that he has spent the last 28 years out of trouble. Like, he has no police record other than traffic violations that everybody has. Uh-huh. And he's a small business owner who's still in the area.
Yeah, it doesn't seem very likely that, you know, he would just have this one off and that, like, there wouldn't be further spin outs.
Right. But that's also not unheard of. But yes, he would have to be pretty much like a stone cold psychopath to murder a near stranger and then just live his life normally in the same area for the following decades without giving any hint of violence either before or since. But it does happen. So there's this podcast, Unraveled, and they did an entire season on one and done killers, which is just like insanely terrifying. So these are men who ended up being convicted of murders, like, you know, years and years after the fact through DNA. After, you know, it was shown that like these guys killed these people, they had never been suspects because they lived completely normal lives before and after. And just never did anything else. Like, they didn't have a preceding history of violence. They didn't have any violent or anything else happening after the murders. They were just like these people who just happened to kill somebody and then just go on. And like, one was a wedding DJ.
Oh my God.
Just weird shit. And yes, that's not common, but again, it's not unheard of.
Yeah.
There were also a lot of people at the fair.
Right.
So it's certainly not outside of the realm of possibility that Aaron did come into contact with a random violent psychopath who remains unknown to this day.
Yeah.
However, going down that route, let's not forget that Aaron was athletic and nearly 6 feet tall.
Yes. Right.
So it seems unlikely that either David or a stranger could have done anything to her around the fairgrounds without other people witnessing it.
Yeah.
Like, she would not have gone down easily.
And how big is Dave? Do we know?
I actually don't know.
Okay.
I'm assuming like around the same ish. She was 5'11", so he's probably around that. Like, nobody mentioned him being 6'5". Or something, right? And I think if he was either extremely tall or extremely short, that would have been mentioned.
Right, yeah, probably.
You know what I mean? If he's like 5'6 or 6'5, like, I think that would have been in some of the articles.
Probably.
So
yeah.
Because it wasn't, I'm guessing he's, you know, 5'10 to 6 feet ish, give or take. Uh-huh. So, like, roughly around her size. It's not like he or somebody else could have just like attacked her, right, at the fairgrounds without somebody noticing. Uh-huh. But even if she were drugged, for instance, her size would make her difficult to physically manipulate.
Right.
So for the stranger theory to make sense, that person likely would have had to convince her to leave with them voluntarily.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something it sounds like she normally would have done. She would have just like left with some random person. But considering that she was stuck at this fair about 40 minutes from home, like it is conceivable that she would have done that, especially if, again, we're taking Dave's story at face value and he truly was wandering around for 2 hours, you know, maybe by the 90 minute mark, Aaron's like, shit, he's not coming back.
I need to get home.
Right. And then she's like, okay, well, you know, this nice person offered me a ride or whatever. Like, you might be more likely to accept, even if that's not something you would typically do. Though it does seem more likely that Aaron would have tried to find a phone in order to just call her sister or her brother-in-law or whomever to come pick her up. But I don't know what the payphone situation was there.
Right, yeah. This is a field where a fair is taking place.
Exactly. So I don't know if there was like a phone nearby, you know, that she could have used. So she could have met somebody who said that they lived nearby or like, hey, I can take you to this gas station a mile down the road that does have a payphone or whatever.
Somebody that lives nearby, like Dave's friend.
Yeah, right. But no, but like you can see that, right? Like you can see if, okay, maybe she won't make the leap to driving 40 minutes plus back to Anchorage with a stranger.
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody said, hey, yeah, I'll take you to the gas station and you can use the phone, like that seems a little more plausible that she would accept that.
Yeah.
Or Dave, the person who she was with, who has a completely nonsensical story of the evening and whose activities between approximately 5 p.m. and 8 a.m. are unaccounted for, could have killed her.
Yep.
That's what Aaron's family believes. And I mean, it's easy to see why. The problem is Aaron has still not been found. After nearly 3 decades, we have to assume that even if she is, most of the physical evidence will be lost to time and the elements. But that doesn't mean that this isn't solvable or that it's hopeless. There's always the possibility that Aaron's killer worked with someone else, that he talked to someone else, that he himself may come forward and admit to what he did to Aaron, or that she could be found in a place or with an item that could connect her back to her killer. This is why Stephanie still runs a Facebook page dedicated to keeping her sister's story out there. This is why, even though she moved out of Alaska years ago, she still periodically returns to put up flyers. Someone out there could very well know something. There could still be witnesses who don't even realize that they know something important. Aaron's family hasn't given up, and neither should we. They're fighting for her and mourning the woman they knew, along with the woman she never had the chance to be. Stephanie said, quote, "We think about her every day. She had such a fun sense of humor. She was sharp, witty, and very personable. She was just 24 when she went missing and didn't have the chance to become a writer, start a family, and be around us on a daily basis. We so looked forward to our future. We knew it would be bright." End quote. Marie Gilbert has been missing from Girdwood, Alaska since July 1st, 1995. Erin is a white woman with brown hair cut into a bob and hazel eyes. She was 5'11 and around 145 pounds at the time of her disappearance. She was last seen wearing a black leather jacket, a black and white striped shirt, black jeans, and brown mountain boots. She has a tattoo of a large blue flower on her chest. Anyone with information on the disappearance of Aaron Marie Gilbert is asked to call the Alaska State Trooper Cold Case Unit at 907-269-5511. Her family is offering a $35,000 reward in this case. You can see all the sources for this episode along with photos and videos at our website, andthentheyweregone.com.
And be sure to follow us on social, And Then They Were Gone Pod on Facebook and at ATTWG Pod on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe and consider leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It will help new listeners find us. And the more people that listen, the more chances we have of bringing someone home.
And we'll see you here next week for a brand new episode.
See you next week.
And Then They Were Gone is hosted by Kona Gallagher and Ethan Flick. All research, writing, and editing is done by Kona Gallagher. Theme music is The Stork by Ketza. Additional music is provided by Kai Engel. And Then They Were Gone is a Little Monster production.
Hey, you can do it!
The holidays are almost here, and if you still have names on your list, don't panic. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. You'll discover presents that feel meaningful and personal, never rushed or last minute. Uncommon Goods looks for products that are high quality, unique, and often handmade or made in the U.S., so every gift feels special and thoughtfully chosen. Here are a few things that I'm getting. Unlock the Beer Escape Room. It's a cute little cage that you could put a six-pack of beer in, and then you have to do an escape room to get the code to open the cage. I am absolutely getting this for my brother-in-law because this is in his wheelhouse in every way. The DIY Root Beer Science Kit I'm getting for my 8-year-old because he has recently discovered root beer and he likes learning. So this is going to be a really fun project for the both of us. So don't wait. Make this holiday the year you give something truly unforgettable. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/ATTWG. That's uncommongoods.com/ATTWG for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
If you're the purchasing manager at a manufacturing plant, you know having a trusted partner makes all the difference. That's why, hands down, you count on Grainger for auto reordering. With on-time restocks, your team will have the cut-resistant gloves they need at the start of their shift. And you can end your day knowing they've got safety well in hand. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.